This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. This is day three of the government shutdown. Hundreds of thousands of federal workers are furloughed. President Trump has said he is figuring out ways to fire them permanently. White House Budget Director Russell Vogt now saying that the administration will withhold $2 billion already earmarked for Chicago infrastructure projects. Earlier this week, $18 billion in infrastructure was also pulled from Blue State, New York. A shock in Southern California.
Sitting at home watching TV. And then all of a sudden, it's kind of sounded like sort of like plane engines, like almost a plane about to crash. And then a big whoosh, and the curtains all flipped up. Hmm. The windows were slightly open. Almost felt like an earthquake because the house shook. So we didn't know what was going on.
Keith Moore, who lives next door to the Chevron refinery in El Segundo that burned overnight. New information about the Manchester synagogue attack. It's now believed one of the two people who died was shot and killed by police. This is ABC News.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulatz. Three people died in a fiery crash Saturday morning. Around 10:35, the Sauk County Communications Center received a call for a single-vehicle traffic accident on Coon Bluff Road, just north of County Highway P in Dolona Township. Preliminary reports indicated that a vehicle was northbound on Coon Bluff Road at a high rate of speed, lost control, and entered a wooded area. The vehicle immediately started on fire. During the investigation, it was discovered there were three occupants in the vehicle. All three subjects sustained fatal injuries. Names of the deceased are being withheld at this time. Wisconsin students got a very special history lesson on Monday at Madison's Forest Hill Cemetery. Wisconsin Veterans Museum Education Director Eric Wright says the Talking Spirits Tour brought four living history actors to help educate students on the lives of soldiers during and after World War II. Wright says bringing in the actors to share these stories is much more impactful than simply reading facts at a grave marker. Some of the stops on the tour include a Madison doctor who survived the Battle of Buffalo Wallo in the Philippines during the Pacific Campaign, and a Fond du Lac soldier who was rescued from a German POW camp. Battery charges have been upgraded to homicide charges after the victim of an attack outside Camp Randall Stadium died. 33-year-old Keith Jones was arrested last weekend on initial charges of aggravated battery and robbery. Jones allegedly assaulted and seriously injured another person in the Southside parking lot early in the morning, September 20th. The victim in the attack died last week, and UW-Madison police have sent upgraded first-degree homicide charges to the Dane County District Attorney's Office. Jones is still in jail on a probation hold. The victim has not been identified. I'm Joanne Krulatz.
Bring on the Cubs. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports Baseball. It's the Brewers and the Cubs tomorrow, just after 1 p.m. in Game 1 of the Best of 5 Divisional Series in Milwaukee. After being swept by the Yankees in New York at the start of the season, who would have thought the Brewers would set a franchise record of 97 wins on the way to winning their division? Pat Murphy.
No one expected this. To break the franchise record for wins, would you have said that coming out of New York or after opening day here? It just shows you who's in the room.
The Brewers have had the past week off. Another workout session at the ballpark today. Are they ready now for the playoffs? Freddy Peralta will start for Milwaukee.
We just have to stay focused and keep doing what we've been doing, trusting in each other, just to remind us also that we never have to give up and keep going.
College football, the Badgers take on number 20th ranked Michigan in Ann Arbor. Kickoff tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. with Sports on Mike Clemens.
You're listening to 107.7 WRCE, home of the Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.
Fall-like temperatures will be back next week. We're going to be dealing with this sunny summer-like weather for a few more days. Today, sunshine, mid to upper 80s for a high this afternoon. Tonight, back into the 60s. Tomorrow, sunny and windy with a high again in the mid to upper 80s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it is 66.
Ahoo, this is Robert Pilot of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we share stories from Turtle Island highlighting the people and issues shaping our communities. From protecting water to treaty rights and preserving languages and traditions, we cover it all. Hear voices like Arvina Martin of Emerge Wisconsin, Dr. Stately, Robert Lilligren, and more. Because Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
You know what I'm a sucker for at a Chinese buffet?
Crab rangoons.
Yep. I'll have about four or five of those things.
And they have cocktail weenies, which is a nice delicacy at the Chinese buffet.
You know, I'm trying to think of a buffet I went to that had cocktail weenies.
Who's eating that?
I don't know.
Even if you have a gourmet recipe at home, you're not making cocktail weenies. You're certainly not eating them when you go to the Chinese buffet.
Yeah.
Kind of weird.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Todd Alba.
The World Dairy Expo is underway in Madison, and tariffs, how they're affecting agriculture. We'll discuss it all with Midwest Farm Report Director Pam Yonke next time.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Hey, Kristen, listen to this. Parker's going to introduce me. Here it comes.
Across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from Nashville, in his hotel room, where he keeps on talking to himself.
I know, it's cool.
The founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, it's not just me. I got friends as well. And a cheering section.
You have friends in low places.
I have a friend in low places. Not just because I was at the Garth Brooks bar by the same name last night, but because we've got all these boxes up on screen on social media, and Kristen's literally in the low place right now. But she is a friend just the same. Happy to have her here. Dr. Lyra Lee, good morning. How are you?
Good morning and happy Friday, baby. It is going to be such a beautiful weekend in Wisconsin. I think you got the short end of the stick being in Nashville this weekend.
It's as hot here as the Nashville chicken that they like to talk about. But we'll somehow survive. They're talking about it down here too, how hot and dry it's been. But, you know, we'll take one more summer weekend before the actual autumnal stuff gets here.
Yes,
but there's
will.
A lot of big doings this weekend. We've got the Brewers. We now know that they're going to be playing the Cubs in the National League Division Series. We know that game one is going to be held on Saturday. We know it's a Saturday afternoon game, and that you can hear the pregame starting at 12:35 tomorrow afternoon on Civic Media stations in Richland Center, Oshkosh, Racine, Park Falls, and Hayward. And we know that game two at American Family Field will be a late game on Monday. First pitch won't be until after 8 p.m.
Oh.
So, set your Tuesday morning alarm accordingly, either a little later or a second and third alarm if need be. But that's just one of the big notes about this weekend. The other, of course, is that the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show has done blowed up and is going statewide, baby.
Woo! I'm so excited. Noon on Saturday, baby, all across the Civic Media radio network.
Look at that. Noon on Saturday, all across the network.
That's prime time. Wow.
I know. Jeez,
yeah.
That's bigger than this humble little show. This is so cool. So just remember us little people, Kristen, as you continue climbing the ladder here, okay?
Oh, this is going to be a good conversation, too. Dr. Laura Hanks, who was a frequent contributor on Jane's show, is joining me, and she's my colleague, Laura Hanks, at your cervix. It is Gyno Talk. We talk about the pause in abortion care in Wisconsin and contraception and all the stuff that you would expect two gynecologists to talk about. It is fun. It is fun.
Good. Well, yeah. It's fun, but you also have to tackle some of that serious news, the ongoing threats to women's health, like this, as you put it, this backdoor abortion ban that you see in Trump's big bloated boondoggle and the cutting of Medicaid to Planned Parenthood for, non-abortion services, which is why Planned Parenthood is curtailing abortion care in Wisconsin, at least while this whole law is being challenged, which puts up a whole new set of challenges for women and for their physicians.
It makes it really hard. Importantly, Planned Parenthood continues to offer all of the other services that they offer. So if you go there for your pap test or STI screening or any of that stuff, they're still doing it. And there still is abortion care being offered in Milwaukee. Two independent clinics are offering care. But this is really, really devastating for the rest of the state. So one of my dear friends, Dr. Shefali Sharma, wrote an op-ed in the Wisconsin State Journal today, and it is so overdue. She asks the question, why are hospitals and doctors across the state not just providing this service as a routine service? Why is this not considered healthcare in our regular practice? And you know, when you think about it, it doesn't make a lot of sense, does it, Pat?
No, I've never understood that we've stigmatized abortion care to the point where it has to be done in, you know, special clinics rather than just wherever it needs to be done. And it seems to me if you're providing health care, then provide health care, not just the health care that may or may not get you in trouble with some political factions.
Exactly. When you have a problem, you go to your doctor. Your doctor mm-hmm. listens to you. You talk about all the alternatives. You come up with a solution. You initiate a treatment plan. And then you follow through. You do the aftercare. You have that relationship. You have that trust. You do that with anything. But for some reason, abortion care isn't part of that. We need to bring it back into the realm of regular care that we provide our patients. So it's a wonderful op-ed. And it's what we're really going to be talking about a lot across the state in the months to come.
No doubt about that. But there's something else that's being talked about when it comes to reproductive rights and politics. And it is some comments that were made by Ezra Klein, podcaster, columnist, political analyst, widely respected in progressive circles, but really lost a little bit of that respect recently with comments first in writing and then written comments saying essentially that the Democratic Party, if it's going to win more elections, needs to be more welcoming to candidates who are Democratic and progressive, but favor limits on women's reproductive health care rights, which seems like a nasty bargain to win elections is to forego the rights of half the population, Kristen.
I see where he's coming from. Mm-hmm. I respect and appreciate his work. But when it comes to really fundamental rights for people, I don't know that there's room to bargain. And I know that he's saying, when you put your flag in the sand and you say, this is the thing that we are not going to compromise on, then it makes it really hard to negotiate. We're seeing that right now with the government shutdown. I mean, the Republicans are saying, we're just not going to negotiate. And that is their negotiation standpoint. It makes it really challenging. But there are a lot of other things that you could be talking about in the general realm of what conservatives and liberals do. I think Ezra Klein's point is really poorly taken by people in the reproductive rights movement who recognize that this is a fundamental right. This is existential. Literally, this is about the future of women and the trajectory of our lives and our ability to make our own personal healthcare decisions. So anytime that a man makes a comment like this, when he can never be affected in a way like this, I think there are a lot of us that say, all right, thanks, buddy. Appreciate right. your opinion.
Right. And by the way, it also illustrates the paradox of being a progressive is that, when you're a progressive, you stand for people's rights, all people's rights, more so than those who would prefer to limit certain people's rights. So what happens is, those folks on the conservative side of things will attack somebody's rights. It might be abortion rights. It might be LGBTQ rights. Let's just take trans rights for a moment. And so when the people who are for protecting rights then defend those people against the bullying, against legislation and all that, what do you then hear? Oh, Democrats, all they ever talk about are trans people. This is just they don't stand for me. They just stand for, this particular group. No, that's not true. But we're defending that particular group in this instance the way that we would defend you if you were the one whose rights were being limited. But too many people want to see defending rights of a group as meaning we're only involved with the special interest of that group rather than everybody's rights who should be defended.
Yeah, it really highlights the hypocrisy of the Republican Party, who are all about individualism and my rights and taking away government control, except for the things that they care about. It doesn't, if you look at it holistically, it doesn't make a lot of sense. So I don't think that this is the place where Democrats need to capitulate. I think that progressives need to continue to push to support each other in a very, collaborative, nurturing community, a elevating kind of way. And, you know, it gets tricky because it's hard. But I think the more that we stand up and make our voices heard and tell our stories and help people understand what this really means for us, the more progress we make.
In our last hour, Joan Esposito was talking to us about how the chatter, and that's all you can really say about it, when it comes to the government shutdown, is that there, and we've always known there are Republican members of Congress who do believe that the enhanced tax credits that help the Affordable Care Act stay affordable should not be allowed to expire at the end of this year, as they are currently scheduled to do. Donald Trump and congressional Republicans, they want them to expire. That's going to jack up healthcare costs for millions of people. The way that this shutdown most likely ends is that Trump or the Republicans agree to a 1 or 2 year extension of keeping health insurance more affordable. Do you share that level of optimism, if we can put that in quotation marks, about how a government shutdown will eventually end?
Hey, it's going to be hard, because you know that Donald Trump does not want to negotiate. This is the thing that he really prides himself on. But we're starting to see the letters come out. By the end of this month, people are going to have their renewal letters with their projected premium increases. And people are actually starting to see what their healthcare is going to cost. And they don't like it. And that is just the tip of the iceberg. This is something that Republicans did not plan for when they put this budget together. They thought that the pain was going to be after the midterms, but it's starting to happen now. Americans are starting to wake up and understand what's going on, and they don't like it.
Yeah, look, I'll take issue with one thing where you say he likes to negotiate. He likes to talk about negotiating. He's never actually negotiated anything in his first or second term as president to this point. And the reason you have that TACO acronym, Trump always chickens out, is because he does. First, he inflicts all this pain, and then he accepts something and claims victory over it. It's how the last government shutdown that he instigated in 2019 ended, when he said, "We're shutting down the government till I get more money for a border wall." And he didn't. Eventually, somebody moved a little pile of money from one basket to the other, and he claimed victory, even though it didn't really get him exactly what he wanted. And that, I think that's probably what's going to happen here too, Kristen, is he gets points for, you know, stomping his feet and throwing a tantrum, but ultimately he's not going to get near the things that he wants, because what the people want trumps that, pun intended, having healthcare you can afford.
You're exactly right. Okay, I misspoke. He's not great at negotiating. He's good at making you think he negotiated.
There you go.
He's great at marketing and selling you something. So I anticipate that something like that will happen. There will be some sort of a movement, and he will sell it as a huge victory for himself, and people will believe it because he's great at selling things.
Oh, yeah. And in the meantime, he will get to fire or furlough thousands upon thousands of good, hardworking Americans who are just trying to serve the public here. So we'll monitor throughout the weekend here. And hopefully, Kristen, when you're back here on Monday morning, we'll have some better news to share out of Washington, D.C. So now we know it's Brewers versus Cubs. And so that game will be on Saturday. The Packers have a bye week. So what does a girl do in Green Bay when the Packers have a bye week?
I think it's going to be yard work.
Yeah. Again with the yard work. Have you ever thought of apartment or condo life? You have so much yard work that you're doing all the time.
I love it.
You're queen of mulch over here. So
I went and bought some Weed Be Gone yesterday. I usually don't like chemicals, but it's getting a little out of hand. So I like literally walked across my entire yard yesterday. I'm like 5 weeks after a knee replacement, but I just can't help it, because it's so satisfying to like do it myself and take pride in how pretty. I think I'm turning into my dad.
Parker, we have to get a game board. We have to let the listeners chime in. I hate to say this, but I think we have to make the game official. Okay. At what point does Kristen send us a note from the hospital? Yeah, we have to go back and do the surgery again. Apparently I overdid it, and they have to work on the knee again. Mm-mm. Kristen, don't make us play this game.
What's the over under on weeks to that point?
That's what we're saying. So Kristen, Don't let us pick the under on this.
It's... I had my post-op visit yesterday, and then I went to Menards and got the stuff.
They said I was doing okay, so now I'm going to go bike a marathon. Yeah, something like that. The Dr. Kristen Lierley Show can now be heard statewide across the Civic Media Radio Network. Did you say Saturdays at noon?
Saturdays at noon and on Sunday mornings on our YouTube channel, Dr. Kristen Lierley.
Dr. Kristen Lierley on YouTube. There you go. Mike Clemens will be along before too long to talk to us about sports and the Brewers Cubs series. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
News from the center, WRCE.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Tom Tiffany, the Republican congressman representing Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District, has finally made it official. He's running for governor. The election for governor in 2026 is the state's first open race for the office since 2010, and it's sure to invite many candidates to run. And on the Republican side, Tiffany's is the most significant announcement yet. There's a very good chance that he is going to be the Republican nominee for governor at this time next year. If that proves to be the case, it would signify a major shift in the center of power for Republican politics in Wisconsin. For so long, it's been the Wow counties, Waukesha, Ozaukee, and Washington, three of the counties that surround Milwaukee, that have been the Republican stronghold in the state. But if Tiffany is the one on the top of the ticket, it will be the most clear indicator yet of how the party has shifted from more of a suburban one to one where GOP voters are more centered in exurban or rural areas.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us. Matt Nair on air.
He joins us every Friday at this time for some recombobulation. He is also Civic Media's political editor. Dan Schaefer is here.
Tom Tiffany has made it official. He is running for governor. I think he is a Trump endorsement and a strong fundraising quarter away from clearing the field.
Well, but Tony Weed has endorsed him, which is like being Trump adjacent.
It's like the transitive property of endorsements.
Yes.
The 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, only just sad.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Todd Allbaugh Show.
The incomparable Jane Matt Nair. You're a coffee drinker.
I got up at 3 o'clock in the morning for most of my career. Yeah. You need coffee.
Something.
Or a slap across the face or something. How much coffee do you drink a day? How many cups
not
of coffee?
Not as much as you might think. Maybe 2 16-ounce cups, more or less. Maybe not quite that much some days.
Zahmer, is that true?
I mean, from what I can verify, I don't know what he drinks in the privacy of his own home.
No right. One knows.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app.
Small businesses are the heart of America. As the nation's largest nonprofit resource of expert business mentoring, SCORE has helped millions of entrepreneurs build their businesses. For free, find a mentor today at score.org.
Local news, weather, and sports on air and streaming on the Civic Media app. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm Phil Nee with a look at Southwestern Wisconsin sports. The Ithaca Athletic Hall of Fame will grow by one tomorrow as John Jones will be inducted. From the class of 1975, the first Ithaca athlete to win an individual state championship when he won the state track discus throw in the spring of 1975. We talk this week about his beginnings at Ithaca and some of the other sports he was involved in. You still hold the single game scoring record at Ithaca, 45 points. Do you recall that game, John?
Well, some of it. I recall that at that time, the athletic director, Coach Pampu, had suggested and talked about me using the backboard or the glass more when I shot, and because a lot of my shots were, you know, 5, 10, 12 feet. That was the first game that I actually worked on it and took his advice, and it seemed like it just was, everything fell into place. The game was a blur, but it was, I don't remember who it was against, but I do remember the feeling of scoring a lot of points was, it was a tremendous feeling for me and the team. So don't even know if we won or not, to tell you the truth.
So they weren't all layups then, in other words?
No, they weren't. They weren't.
And your teammates, knowing that you had the hot hand, must have been getting you the ball.
Well, as far, I'm sure Dave Nelson was one of the top guards at that time, and even though he was a really good shot himself, him and people like Jim Harper, Danny Ironmonger were feeding a lot. So yeah, it was a game, like I say, 50 years ago. It's hard to remember specifics, but I remember the feeling. It was a pretty fun game.
And was Mike Stoddard your coach, John?
Yes, he was. I guess he was pretty much the basketball coach all 4 years.
Some of the names you brought up, John, as well, I think we were all pretty fortunate to, because I had some of those coaches and teachers and mentors as well, but we really were fortunate to have some of those as leaders, weren't we?
Yes, very much so. I guess at some point I'd have to look back and say that because maybe the loss of my father during high school, some of those guys stepped up gave me a lot of support and a lot of encouragement, and along with the teaching and the coaching. But it was more than just a coach athlete relationship. It was friends, fatherly. It was good times for me and them.
That's John Jones. He'll be officially inducted into the Ithaca Athletic Hall of Fame tomorrow at 2 o'clock. The homecoming game will kick off at 2:30. Well, last night in volleyball news, Cuba City put on an impressive performance and spoiled Riverdale's Thursday night homecoming festivities. The Cubans won in three sets, 15-12, 15-12, and 15-13 over the Chieftains. Cheyenne Hotocker had 9 kills to lead the visitors. The Cubans' serving was effective. Emma Joel had 4 aces in the third and final set. Macy McKay had 5 kills and an ace for the Chieftains. Lily Barr scored 2 kills in the third and final set. The Chieftains fell to 2-3 with a loss. Cuba City improved to 5-1. Riverdale won the JV match 2-1 with a 15-11 win in the third. The Chieftains will play at Pecatonica on Tuesday night. Cuba City will appear in the Richland Center tournament tomorrow. Elsewhere, Iowa Grand swept Boscobel. Mineral Point by sweep over Fenimore. In the Scenic Bluffs, Hillsboro is a winner against Nisida in 4. Cashton swept New Lisbon. Westby 3-0 over GET. Scholesburg swept Belmont. Onalaska 3-0 over Toma. The Richland Center soccer team defeated Lodi last night. The Hornets traveled to Lodi for both JV and varsity action. The JV lost a close battle, 4-3. The varsity won 2-1. Giovanni Cerna scored a penalty kick and a live play goal and also won the game for the Hornets. 2 more huge goals for the Hornets by Giovanni Cerna. And the Hornets win 3 in a row, including Prairie du Chien, Dodgeville, and Lodi. Things looking good for the Brewers and the Hornets as they get ready for the weekend, according to Coach Tom Stadler. Elsewhere in soccer, River Valley shut out Reedsburg 2-0. Platteville Lancaster and Lakeside Lutheran tied at 2. Wautoma Wild Rose edged Mauston 1-0. Ripon 7. Wisconsin Dells 1. Sauk Prairie 1-0 over Baraboo. And Wisconsin Heights beat Portage Poinette 7-1. It's the 7th week of the high school football season. Homecoming action tonight for the Richland Center Hornets. Here is Coach Andrew Troxel.
I mean, that was the message right out of the gate on Monday when we had the kids, is that, you know, there's a lot of activities going on, you know, throughout the school and around the community. And at the end of the day, though, the end of the week is about the football game. You know, that's what people come to see. And so we need to make sure that those distractions aren't a barrier or inhibit our ability to execute, you know, our game plan offensively or defensively.
Hear the game tonight on WRCA Radio, Dodgeville at Richland Center for the Hornets' homecoming game. River Valley is at Platteville. Here's Coach Tyler McClain talking about facing a team that River Valley is battling for the conference championship.
First and foremost, when you look at their offense, they can score. They got a lot of good athletes on that side of the ball. They utilize them very well. Offensively, they can put up a lot of points. Defensively, they showed some moments of some excellence as well, but they've also given some points as well. They've been in a lot of shootouts. Again, we're kind of just expecting to do our job both offensively and defensively. Defensively, trying to sort that out as much as we can. And offensively, just putting up as many points as we can.
That's Tyler McLean. Big game in the Southwest tonight. River Valley at Platteville, Prairie du Chien at New Glarus, and Broadhead Judah at Lancaster. In the Scenic Bluffs, Cashton at Bangor, Brookwood at Hillsboro, New Lisbon at Nisida. In the Swall, Fenimore at Cuba City, Lodi at Darlington, Southwestern East Dubuque at Mineral Point, Benton Scales Mount Schulzburg at Belleville. Six Rivers, Potosi Cassville at Waseca Seneca, River Ridge at Iowa Grant, Boscobel at Riverdale. Best of luck to all of the teams getting ready for football and homecoming activities this weekend. It's going to be a great weekend in Southwest Wisconsin. This is Phil Neath thanking you for joining us for a look at sports in Southwest Wisconsin during Pat Kreitlow Mornings. And we hope to see you at all the events going on in Richland Center with Center Color Fest and the Canyon of Lights Parade tomorrow night. Have a great Friday.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to 107.7 WRCE, home for the Todd Allball Show, weekday afternoons from 2 to 4.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulatz. Standardized assessment results released by the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction show a slight increase in student performance in both English language arts and mathematics during the 2024-25 school year. According to data from the Wisconsin Student Assessment System, which includes the Forward Exam, Dynamic Learning Maps, the Pre-ACT Secure, and the ACT, 47.7% of students in all tested grades met or exceeded expectations in ELA, while 48.6% did so in mathematics on tests administered in spring 2025. Statewide data also shows performance gaps among different student subgroups continue to exist. The Forward Exam assesses students in grades 3 through 8 in ELA and mathematics. Starting last year, the test started including a separate reading score within the ELA assessment, aligning with Wisconsin's ongoing efforts to strengthen literacy and improve student outcomes. In the 2024-25 school year, public school students showed a slight improvement in reading performance, with overall Forward scores in reading rising by 0.3 percentage points over the previous year. Students participating in private school choice programs saw a 2.5 percentage point decline in reading performance on the Forward. On the ELA portion of the Forward, public school students saw a 0.5 percentage point increase in performance, while students in choice programs experienced a 2.3 percentage point decline. In mathematics, public school performance dipped slightly by 0.3 percentage points, and choice student performance declined by 2.7 percentage points. For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Thinking about heading to the theater this weekend? There is a nice variety of films headed to your local screen. What would Halloween season be without a ghost in the theaters? The ghost is Casper and compliments of a re-release from 1995 to commemorate the 30th anniversary of the mediocre film, which drew barely 50% fresh reviews according to Rotten Tomatoes. Dwayne Johnson stars as UFC fighter Mark Kerr in The Smashing Machine, a historical drama that's pulling a 76% on Rotten Tomatoes. Bone Lake is a horror thriller that finds two couples spending a weekend sharing a lakeside home. The film is crushing with critics and currently pulling a 94% on the tomato meter. Good Boy follows canine hero Indy in this rated PG thriller that is also a critic's darling at 91%. It's hard to go wrong with a canine hero. Let's go to the movies. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
.7 WRCE, news from the center and home for the Todd Allball Show, Monday through Friday from 2 to 4.
Fall-like temperatures will be back next week. We're going to be dealing with this sunny summer-like weather for a few more days. Today, sunshine, mid to upper 80s for a high this afternoon. Tonight, back into the 60s. Tomorrow, sunny and windy with a high again in the mid to upper 80s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it is 66.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
State Representative Ahmaud Rivera-Wagner talking about this new piece of legislation in regards to housing. And who have you reached across the aisle and worked with on this issue?
I worked with folks like Rep. Armstrong, who our districts couldn't look any different. But when you center the actual experiences of your district, not your political parties, but the things that people need, there's a lot more alignment and possibility when that is the centerpiece.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for youth.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals into your body.
And nicotine, which can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media.
Many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping.
Because when you talk, they hear you.
Learn more at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Maggie Dawn.
At 4:30, I'll be joined by State Representative Lee Snodgrass, who's joined with Democrats to introduce a bill that makes it a requirement for elected officials to spend some time working on elections. What a novel idea.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
Oh, look what Parker found in the music library.
Oh, yeah.
Seems like the right day for it.
Exactly. It's a great day for it. Hopefully, it's going to be a great week.
Yes, we probably could play it all throughout next week, or at least half of next week, because hopefully it's a three-game sweep against the Cubs.
That's a good point.
You never know for sure. Let's bring in Mike Clemens to talk more about the series, the National League Division Series. It'll be the Brewers versus the Cubbies starting tomorrow afternoon, since the Cubs emerged from that wild card round with the San Diego Padres. Mike Clemens, good morning. How are you?
Pretty good. Yeah, that Cubs game last night, that's the first time the Cubs have ever had a go-home series like that. You know, they clinched a playoff series in the history of Wrigley Field. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
They went to a World Series in 45, and, you know, they won a World Series. But, you know, this was, you know, to win that final game and send the Padres home at the end of the season in this wild card series, first time that happened. And now, how many of those Cubs fans are going to be able to snag tickets and watch the Brewers and the Cubs go at it? The game first pitch is tomorrow at 1:08. It's going to be on television. Of course, we'll have it on the radio, but it's going to be on television on TBS or HBO Max. And I was joking with a guy at one of the workouts I covered the other day with the Brewers, because they've been working out at AmFam Field. I said, do you know why it's at 1:08? Because they figure it's going to take you 8 minutes to find the game on your cable.
Yes, I could totally see that being on TBS. You can catch the pregame on Civic Media starting at 12:35 tomorrow afternoon. And I was disappointed, but I totally understand that Brian Anderson, who calls games for TBS as well as for the Brewers, has been assigned to the Phillies Dodgers series. I suppose they can't have a home announcer doing the network broadcasts. But I also noted this week that that BA is one of the finalists for the Ford Frick Award. For the Baseball Hall of Fame for broadcasters. Yeah. That's a pretty cool honor.
Oh, and he's grown so much since he got that Brewers job, right? I mean, he's calling the French Open this summer.
Yeah.
You know, so we're very lucky to have him. And, I just think it's cool that he still figures, though, that, you know, his home base is at, like Euchre. Like, he still loves calling Brewer games, but, you know, he'll branch off and do basketball and whatever sport that these networks bring him into. So, tomorrow it'll be Freddy Peralta on the mound. I don't think Brandon Woodruff's coming back. Murph is keeping that kind of a secret. So the number two pitcher on Monday night for game two will probably be Quinn Priester, who had such a good summer. And then after that, I don't know. You know, I mean, the team that, had that winning streak in August, they've been hurt, in the bullpen. And just watching these games, all these games, Red Sox and Yankees and the other ones in the series, this is the time you need, the best pitching you've got. And I know that the Brewers had to spend a whole year sort of making things up as they go. Colin Ray, will he be able to come back, your closer? Because you want that veteran, guy with ice water veins in these clutch situations in the playoffs. But it'll be Freddie, probably against the Cubs reporters. Craig Counsell post game last night didn't say, but they think it's either going to be Javier Assad, who's got a 3.6 ERA, or former Brewer Colin Ray could be their starter tomorrow for Game 1 in Milwaukee.
Yeah, and by the way, Game 2 on Monday, that's going to be a late game. Late start, first pitch at 8:08 in the evening from American Family Field for Game 2 of that National League Division Series. And I know what you mean about the injuries because, again, one of the things that was so surprising about the Brewers, you know, when they had a rather slow start, we expected a slow start because the pitching core had been so banged up and yet somehow cobbled together win after win after win, surprise after surprise from some of the other pitchers that were in there. But now it kind of feels like the pendulum has started to swing the other way. But I did notice yesterday in the Red Sox-Yankees game, the Boston pitcher, it was only his fifth major league start ever. Mm-hmm. And for the Yankees, I believe it was like his 15th major league start ever. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I guess we're just at that time of year where, yeah, you want the veteran pitcher, but you're going to have to rely on some of these younger pitchers to step up.
And this is where the managers earn their paycheck, right? I mean, for Murph to understand that the Miz, Jacob Mizorowski, kind of flamed out there in terms of giving up hits. Guys sort of figured out some of his pitches, even though they're coming in at 101 miles an hour. And so now he's probably been demoted to a middle relief guy when they get into the situation. Murph did say the other day that their veteran, Jose Quintana, is looking good. And so at least he's planted that seed into his mind that in counsel's mind that they'll be looking at this. But I mean, I get done with you this morning and we pack up, we go down and we'll have a media session today. We'll talk to Murph and Yelich and the rest of the players. Then they'll have a 2-hour workout at the ballpark today. They've had this bye week. They'll be working out today from 3 to 5, taking BP, running the bases, working on some fundamentals to get warmed back up and back into some sort of a rhythm for tomorrow afternoon's game against the Chicago Cubs. It's going to be a great series. Also good for me because I got a Packer bye week, so I can cover baseball in Milwaukee this weekend. Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
No, that is a great thing. And then, there's so many other sports activities going on, and not the least of which would be the Milwaukee Bucks, their season coming up before too much longer. And there was an open house media day this week. How did that go?
Well, we walk in there, and it's like, because this would be the first chance to talk to Giannis since the playoffs. And where's Giannis? He's not here. What?
Oh, no.
he went to Greece this summer, right, to play for his nation, for his country in the European League. He tested positive for COVID the other day. So he's in quarantine. So now the Bucks had their initial practices with their new team. You know, and John Horst talked about, do you realize, Pat, a year ago at this time, you're talking about a team with Giannis and Brooke Lopez. You're waiting for Chris Middleton to come back from double ankle surgery. And Damian Lillard. Those guys are all gone. So, I mean, it's a new look to this team. Miles Turner brought in from the Pacers. Younger guys, instead of being, 35, the average age is maybe 26 or so. And that's the kind of team that they've gradually built over the past year. And that Doc Rivers, admitted now, when I first got to Milwaukee, I told John, you guys are too old and too slow. I mean, we got to make changes here. They think they're going to do a contract with A.J. Green. They're working on him. But they've got 21 players in camp. They got to get that down to 15. They'll pick three alternates on the 2A. And this weekend they will have some practices in Miami. They've got their first preseason game against the Miami Heat. And Giannis will join them in Miami. Supposed to be flying in from Greece this weekend.
Okay, well, good. Hopefully he's recovered. Although, again, the NBA season lasts as long as it does. So I guess if you're going to get COVID, this is the
time. Now would be the time.
Better earlier than later. Yep, sure. This is when you got to do it. And especially with him having to work with a much less experienced team heading into the season. Well, we mentioned that the Packers have a bye week, and thank goodness, because, boy, if there's anything we need, Mike, it's even more time to dwell on a 40-40 tie against the Cowboys. I, of course, because of the early hours that I have, did not have to be exposed to that. I had to wake up to the news. Mm-hmm. The night owls like you had to catch every painful moment of it. And does the team what's the ability to shake it off versus having that thing really bother them?
You know, first of all, you know, it was Dallas was overdue. The Packers have won every game they've played in that stadium. You know, they were 6-0 going, including a Super Bowl. So Dallas was overdue to get a win down there. The Packers, they went into that game losing two starters on their offensive line. And then they get into it, and it's noisy, and they've got some false start penalties. And then just before the half, you get Matt LaFleur being aggressive because it's still kind of a close game. And instead, they called for a passing play where he should have just run the ball and protected the football. Jordan Love gets strip sacked. Dallas scores two or three times just before the half to take a 16-13 lead. Then it goes back and forth. Now you get down to the final drive, and the Cowboys are up 40-37. And on a 4th and 6th, Jordan Love converts that to his rookie receiver, Matthew Golden, from his own 24-yard line. I'm thinking, oh, now this is it. This could be a great finish for the Packers to pull this one out because they're usually so good at the two-minute drill, except they get down into the red zone, and on a play that goes incomplete trying to hit Matthew Golden, the guys are kind of just standing around. I mean, they let the last 30 seconds slip by, and LaFleur takes responsibility at the end, but I think he's covering for his quarterback where they did not. I had two players, Pat, including Josh Jacobs, one on record that I sent you tape of, who said, I don't think all our guys knew we were supposed to be in two-minute offense. It's like right after the play, you have to run back and spot, you know, and listen for the cadence or this hand signal as to what the next play is. So fortunately, they got it down to 1 second before they were able to call a timeout and kick the tying field goal. But, there's going to be – they've done a lot of self-scouting this week as to how they need to clean up their operations when it gets to be the two-minute drill like that.
Well, I mean, especially it – look, I'm not one to be overcritical, but I can read a clock and know that, you know, there's never a good time within that last minute to be dogging it, to getting back into the huddle or getting back on the line. And, you know, the degree to which, you know, they were confused about this, it's easy to blame LaFleur or Jordan Love, but it feels like a team-wide thing where they lacked some kind of a sense of urgency that I have a feeling was really drilled into them during this week.
There was a preseason game, I think it was the Colts game, where it was just like before half or so, and LaFleur was just going nuts because he called a timeout, and I thought, oh, you know what, it's one of these guys not paying attention. They were supposed to be in there for a substitution. And I said, hey, what happened with that incident on that 3rd and such and such? Because I wrote it down specifically. He knew what I was talking about. He says, time. I was trying to save us from getting a delay a game. So he was mad at the quarterback on that one. Like, dude, you know, you had 3 seconds left. We're going to get to delay a game here, and I've got to save you by calling a timeout. And, I think a little bit of that happened the other night as well. So, you know, at the end of the day, I was stunned by this because the Packers are generally, through the Aaron Rodgers era and now even under Jordan Love, one of the best two-minute teams in the league. I mean, it's almost like the McCarthy-Rodgers era passed that on to LaFleur because they've been very good. You watch some of these good teams that don't seem to know what the heck they're doing when it comes to the last 2 minutes of a game. And LaFleur drills this almost every other day. So it's something that, you know, that they have to work on, no doubt. Because, you know, remember, Aaron Rodgers eventually took control from McCarthy and said, I will run the offense with the last 2 minutes. Because there isn't time for you to get a play called in. Let me do it.
Right.
And they need to hand the keys over to Jordan Love in the same way. Let me call the plays. Let me, you know, be the general out there and decide if we're in the 2 minute offense and what plays we're running next.
That's an excellent point. Got under a minute just to touch on the Badgers. Again, they really start running the gauntlet here, starting with tomorrow's game in Ann Arbor against Michigan.
Yeah. Michigan's ranked 20th. Badgers, they've got problems on the offensive line. I think Luke Fickell's still got a couple of guys who are going to be game time decisions, and this is going to be brutal. I mean, that loss to Maryland was a real gut punch to them. You got, you know, Chris McIntosh, the athletic director, talking at a volleyball game to Mike McCarthy the day after that game. I mean, There's all kinds of red flags going on, so we'll see. The other thing is there was a stat from Wisconsin State Journal. The Badgers have given up more sacks in 4 weeks than they did all last year.
Oh, see, it's going to be a brutal stretch here, but Mike Clemens is going to follow it for us along with everything else. Mike, enjoy the weekend. We'll talk to you later.
You too, Pat. Thank you.
All right, we'll have some final news and notes coming up in just a bit. I'm Pat Quitelow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Come see what's brewing, the Milwaukee Brewers.
Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
You're still glowing, flirting, grooving. You still got it. But your immune system weakens as you age, making it harder to fight flu, pneumococcal pneumonia, RSV, and COVID-19. Vaccines are a key part of any health routine and help strengthen your immune response. Ask your doctor or pharmacist which vaccines you need. Schedule in minutes at VaxAssist.com. Sponsored by Pfizer.
Is violent crime in the U.S. higher than 25 years ago? No. Violent crime is lower nationally and in major cities than 25 years ago, according to FBI and Justice Department data. In 2023, cities with 250,000 or more people reported 771 violent crimes per 100,000 residents, down from 1,093 in 2000. Nationally, violent crime has stayed below 400 incidents per 100,000 residents for a decade, compared to about 500 in the late 1990s. Pew Research reported a 49% drop in violent crime, which includes murder, rape, robbery, and aggravated assault, since 1993. I'm Tricia Young for Wisconsin Watch. Fact briefs are bite-sized fact checks of trending claims produced by Wisconsin Watch and GigaFact. Read more at wisconsinwatch.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. September 16th, Maine and Oregon were the first to be sued by the Trump Department of Justice for refusing to provide voter data to be shared within federal agencies. Six more states have been sued, and it could be a good thing. September 25th, DOJ rolled out complaints for Pennsylvania, Michigan, California, Minnesota, New Hampshire, and New York. In August, Pennsylvania Secretary of State Al Schmidt, a Republican, told DOJ, "Your letter dated August 14 specifically asked for detailed personal and confidential information, including driver's license numbers and Social Security numbers, for all Pennsylvania voters. This request and reported efforts to collect broad data on millions of Americans represent a concerning attempt to expand the federal government's role in our country's electoral process," unquote. States have loudly reminded DOJ that the states and Congress are empowered by the U.S. Constitution for election oversight, not the federal government, and that the requests violate both state and federal privacy statutes. Writing in Election Law Blog, professor of law at LMU Loyola Law School, Justin Levitt, writes that the DOJ legal action could turn out to be a good thing. He said, "Now there will be federal judges carefully examining the claims that DOJ has made about its authority under specific statutes and truly putting them to the test." We've linked to more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Well, you don't need me to tell you, but I will anyway. Brewers Cubs starting tomorrow, National League Division Series Game 1. Pre-game begins at 12:35 on some of these stations across the Civic Media Radio Network. And so poor Parker has to, he's going to be going to see Whitewater play football because the WIAC conference opener games are happening this weekend. Then you got this going on, you have the Badger game going on. There's going to be so much for you to monitor at any single time here.
There is. It's going to be a very long Saturday.
Sunday will be significantly lighter, which I'm very happy about. But like, can't we spread it out a little? Jeez.
Would be nice, but no, you get it all bunched up. Lucky you. Coming up on Matt and Air on Air, right after this fine program at 9:35, Jane and Greg are going to have Lisa Schiller from the Better Business Bureau of Wisconsin talking about apps that claim to pay you to play games on your phone. I see these all the time. Do you play any games on your phone right now?
Very
like
few,
words with friends or something like that. I mean, with other people.
Not with other people on my phone. No.
Okay.
But I do some stuff.
Yeah, I've met, you know, Sherry and I. We have a Boggle type game.
Oh, sure.
And we always have three games going at once of that, and then we have a couple of rounds of Words with Friends, which is like Scrabble, and of course you see commercials, you know, in the game after your round and before they show you your score.
Yeah.
And so many of them are, what's it called, Royal Match, you know, this little king who's trapped in something and you better rescue him. But then occasionally you see these commercials where it's like, I got paid for playing solitaire.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just thinking, who presses that button and says, oh yeah, that's totally what people do. They totally, they don't get played at all. They don't have to give a credit card number and then the charges never stop coming in. But apparently it does. And so Lisa Schiller from the Better Business Bureau is going to talk about apps that claim to pay you. It's almost like there's a phrase, if it sounds too good to be true. What did you say?
Yeah, that sounds a little good, too good to be true. I'm very interested. I might have to give a listen to that. That's very interesting.
Yeah. And Dan Schaefer, Civic Media's political editor and founder of the Recombobulation Area, will be joining Jane and Greg at about 10:06. So stay tuned for all of that for Matt and Air on Air. One story we hadn't gotten to yet today, and I don't even know how to get into this. Former Governor Tommy Thompson is considering running for governor. Now, keep in mind that folks were thinking that Joe Biden was getting too old to be president. He's 82. It's clear that Donald Trump is getting too old and cognitively impaired to be president, and he is 79. Tommy Thompson is 83, and the headline in the Journal Sentinel says that he is seriously considering making a run for governor next year. Molly Beck has the story in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Tommy was governor from 1987 to 2001 and said in the newspaper article and said in an interview on WTMJ, I am still looking at it and I'm seriously looking at it. So that's what goes into it, but no decision has been made, but it's certainly something that isn't too far removed from my brain. Thompson did not return a call from the Journal Sentinel. Earlier this year, Thompson downplayed the idea to the Journal Sentinel, but said that he's in great shape. If elected, Thompson would be 85 when he would take office in January of 2027. And by the way, yeah, it does feel weird for me to say if elected, Thompson would be 85, because nobody says Thompson, it's Tommy. You know, imagine being so well known that as a politician that you only know by the first name and that's Tommy. I remember meeting him when he was running for governor the first time, which was 1986. And at that point, he had been the Republican leader in the state assembly for a number of years. And back then, he had the nickname Dr. No, because he would just, you know, refuse to compromise with Democrats when it came to working on legislation. He was seen as a real obstruction at times. But then he ran for governor. He unseated Democrat Tony Earle. And at that point began the first of four times being elected to office and shedding some of that Dr. No reputation. Now, he's still a Republican through and through, but also worked on various things that did end up having, you know, bipartisan support. For example, the bill that led to what we now call American Family Field for the Brewers. And I think most notably of expanding Highway 29 to four lanes. I've said previously, there ought to be a statue of Tommy Thompson somewhere along Highway 29 to celebrate, you know, the ability to not call that stretch of highway Bloody 29 anymore. But that was then. And I appreciate that Tommy is still interested and still thinks that he could put forward a good race. And you know what? If he gets in, well, good luck to him. God bless. But it was not the headline that I was expecting to see today, that Tommy Thompson is looking at running for governor once again. Well, Parker, I think we got to wrap things up here from Nashville, which also means my daily complaint about the lack of a coffee maker in this hotel room.
Yeah.
But I did find time before the show today to go get coffee down in the lobby.
I was going to say, you had a lot more pep today than yesterday.
Do not recommend.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, I got the coffee in there, but yeah, it's thankfully Sherry was able to bring me something from a nearby coffee shop.
What I hear.
But only after fighting the crowds. There was a big Taylor Swift event here in Nashville celebrating the Life of a Showgirl album dropping. So yeah, before 6 o'clock this morning, there was this big crowd celebrating the album. That is,
Pat,
I guess that's iconic, you know?
I think that crowd was there before midnight. I think that was residual.
Oh, yes.
I don't think they got there at like 5:30. I think they've been there since like 10.
You think they'd been there partying all night listening to Taylor and singing to the albums? You know what? You're right. That makes total sense. And I'm willing to bet you that most of them are well asleep by now, but that a couple of them are now listening to the album for the fifth time
and still crying their eyes out
and still or bebopping. There's some, as Travis Kelce likes to say, there's some real bangers on that album. So that was our big overnight news from here in Nashville. Parker, have a good weekend. Take care of yourself with all those sports tomorrow. Don't overdo it.
Oh, I'll try. Happy travels. Have a good time. Have a good weekend.
Thank you very much. And I'll see you from Dallas as the travels continue. Have a great weekend. I'm Pat Kreitlow, founding editor of Up North News. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The federal government is still shut down. President Trump just posting an AI-generated video depicting the budget director as the Grim Reaper as the administration threatens mass firings for furloughed federal workers. Music mogul Sean Diddy Combs due in a New York courtroom shortly for his sentencing on prostitution-related charges. ABC's Aaron Katursky's outside the courthouse.
Combs has been in jail for more than a year, and his team says that time spent behind bars has been life-changing, filled with reading books, writing, working out or in therapy, and getting sober. He has also been teaching a six-week class to fellow inmates called Free Game about becoming an entrepreneur. The theme of one class, you can make money, but you can't make time.
Prosecutors are asking for an 11-year jail sentence. Police in Manchester, England say one of the two people who died during the ramming and stabbing terror attack outside a synagogue yesterday was actually shot and killed by police.